A special Pause for the Cause episode with Matt Ole from Ajax Paving Industries of Florida. He's here to highlight and advocate for the fantastic humans working in the field of construction.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, Matt. I love being in charge because it means we can do what we want. We can pivot. So this is a special Pause for the Cause. I'm really excited to sit down with you and talk about the passion you have. Talk about you. Say hello to everybody. Give them a little background on who you are.
Well, hey, everybody. I am, as Jeff stated, Matt Ole. I'm a general superintendent for Ajax Paving out of Florida. Been in the construction industry for 27 years. Started at the age of 19. And, man, I love the work, and I think beyond that, and maybe even above that, I love the people in this industry. I like to say they're my tribe. I mean, that's my little statement there, you know, highlighting and advocating for the fantastic humans doing the work of construction. Broadly speaking, I just love blue collar folks in general, but construction specifically, all different kinds, man. They're my people. And I love to talk about them and try to help them every way I can.
Well, so started at 19, 27 years. I mean, it's a long time, man. You've probably seen a lot. How's it changed? I mean, how do you see this transforming, man? What's that journey been like for you?
It has radically changed. Man, I came up in an industry, and all us old timers out here talk about it because I do fit into the class of old timers, I think, at this point. We all talk about the good old. I was just hearing a story today about the good old days, guys drinking after work. And look, I'm not suggesting this is safe. I'm not suggesting it's right. These are probably good changes that have taken place. But, dude, we used to pound beers on the job site. On the job site, you know, towards the end of the day, open up a cooler and start pounding beers and work until the night. And this is back when I was doing residential concrete, you know, and man, I'm lucky I'm alive and didn't hurt anybody else, you know, driving home from the job. Again, not saying those are good things, man, but like stuff like that, stuff like, oh my gosh, like I got cussed every day coming up in this industry. And most of the guys my age will tell you the same story. You know, we were no good MFers or whatever all day long. It was hard. It was tough. There was also like nowadays, there's a labor shortage. Everybody's talking about it. It's hard to find good help, if that's the way you want to put it. But it didn't seem like that was the case when I was coming up in the industry. Like when I was coming up in the industry, like my boss would tell you all the time, I got a stack of applications in there. Like I seen guys get fired constantly. You know, I started residential concrete. There was a bunch of rough guys. We used to joke and say, you know, you got to have a felony or some kind of, you need to have a felony or some kind of, addiction to be able to do what we do. You know, there was rough characters you worked with, most of them ex-cons, you know, good guys. Again, my tribe, I'm not talking down on them. It was rough and you had to get after it. You had to be passionate about what you were doing every day and give it 110%, or chances are you weren't going to make it and they were going to fire you and hire somebody else. That's changed. You know, that's changed radically because of the labor shortage. The way we talk to people has changed radically, which I think is a good thing, to be honest. And a lot of guys my age, you know, a lot of us long for the old days, I would say. And, oh, man, back when I was, you know, we were tough, you know. You can't call somebody a such and such nowadays. And I don't know. I'm in the camp that think that's a good change. That's a good change that we're treating people like humans. And this younger generation, and kudos to them, and I mean that sincerely, they're not going to take that stuff. They wouldn't be talked to the way I was talked to, you know. They'll just bounce and go somewhere else. So that's some of the major changes I've seen, man. Besides the technology, I mean, the technology is also, you know, it's radically different. The field technology, at least total stations, you know, stuff like that, man, that stuff has changed. Automated machine guidance, you know, that stuff has changed the game too.
You dig back. Some of my first work in the business was with a masonry company. We had a big concrete group, and man, I learned a lot about the difference, you know, of what I saw construction and what they had to do and how they had to work. And I mean, you just got to think about not only were you guys doing some of those things, but just, you know, just the way we looked at safety, you know, like we're just now at the point in residential construction, like it's still a fight to get people to wear PPE. It's still a fight to get them to follow and not do just kind of cockamamie stuff that's going to get you hurt. Like we've had to change that. And I'm with you, man. I mean, I think we had to do it for a number of reasons, and not the least of which is the labor shortage and the change in the future. But also, I mean, we were talking about this each time we've met, Matt, like we build the world around us. I mean, I'm just a tech geek that provided software, or at that point in time when I was with the Mason, computers, and you know, I made the network work and I made the phone work, and I'd look at something they built and be like, I had a part in that. I didn't get my hands dirty. I didn't do any of it, but it made me realize just how much we take for granted. And I know we've talked about it. I know that's a part of your story, because you know, you're really trying to tell those stories to change that view. So talk a little bit about, you know, how that's changed you and why, you know, you look at the world around us differently than maybe some of the people who take it for granted driving over those roadways that maybe you were up till midnight, 2 a.m. getting in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I got, you know, not break out the violin, right? You know, but I got home at 4:45 in the morning from a job last night running a project. And, you know, these guys are working night and day. I'm in the roadway industry now. I was in the vertical industry for a while. I've done a lot of different things in construction. I tell like the younger guys, like, and gals, I'll say guys in general, but I mean gals, of course, too. You know, the younger folks in the industry, like I try to hype them up and help them understand that you are of great value. Like it was probably somewhere around 2010 or so for me. And it wasn't like any, but I remember having this kind of aha moment where it was like, man, I am in high demand. Like what I do is going on all over the world, because I was in concrete at the time. I'm like, they're pouring concrete all over the world. I'm good at it. I can manage people. Like I can write my own ticket, you know? And that's true for people in this industry. If you get good at your trade, man, the sky is the limit, especially if you add some leadership qualities and learn how to manage people and lead a team of people. The sky is the limit in this industry. And we take so much for granted. I'm sitting in a parking lot right now, you know, at a Walmart. Somebody paved this parking lot, man. There are concrete islands around here. Somebody poured all this concrete around here. Somebody striped this thing so you know where to park. That Walmart you're walking into, somebody built that. There's a massive concrete floor in there. That'd have been cool to watch getting poured. It's in every one of them. They're out there on big riders, you know, finishing that floor and slicking it up so that when you walk in there, man, you've got a concrete floor to walk on. You know, there's AC in there because HVAC guys put it in there. Like every day, everywhere we go, you are supported. If you are a human being living in the United States and, of course, across the world, every day, everywhere you go, you're being supported by work that construction workers have done. Men and women on the tools have built this stuff that you're utilizing. The office building you go to, whatever it is, just, I mean, take a moment and just look around and go, how did this get here? It got here by the blood, sweat, and tears of, and not too many tears, because you might get beat up in the construction industry. I'm kidding, of course. But, you know, like it got here on the backs of the people doing this work. And that's why I say that, like, I'm passionate about highlighting this. And of course, my parallel passion is the mental health of the people in this industry, because I think that's been neglected to some degree. And there's various reasons why I believe that's the case. But man, it's just, you don't have, we don't have anything without the blue collar people and the construction people building stuff and fixing stuff and working with their hands. They are, and it sounds so cliche because you hear it said all the time, but it's so true. They are the backbone of our society. Doctors don't have hospitals to operate in if that hospital doesn't get built. You know,
we don't have life-saving drugs if those drugs don't have a place to be manufactured and somebody built that facility. We don't have this platform to talk and going through a data center if somebody didn't build the data center and run the HVAC and pour that concrete floor and create the ability and build it all. I mean, it's really funny. They're always like, AI is going to take our jobs. And I'm like, you know, AI is a computer thing and it needs a computer place to build. Like, and somebody has to build that. And by the way, the chicken and the egg, Now, the construction worker came first. I'm gonna end that debate right now because the trades came first. The people who built it came first.
Yeah.
So, but I want to dig into something you talked about there. Like, we've always been really good in the trades. It might not have been fun to learn, but we've been good in the business of construction, of teaching, you know, how to build, like what the trade is, how to use the tool, how to pour the concrete, where to place the rebar, how to tie it, all those things. But you touched on something that I think is the true transformational capability, especially for us, right? At our age, right? I'm going to put us in the same boat there. Sure. Leadership. The leadership, you tell these, and if you haven't followed Matt on LinkedIn, that's where I found him. And I just found myself pulling up his LinkedIn posts and just reading the stories that you tell of the experiences. And then what you're always so good at doing is like, was this really the way it should go? Or maybe, just maybe, like, here's what's going on underneath. You do a fantastic job of storytelling. So dig into that a little bit about, you know, how can we be better as leaders? Because I think that's a quality we don't do well at passing on. We pass our trade on, but not our leadership.
No, that's a great one, man. So I think couple statements here that may be familiar to yourself or other. You manage things, you lead people. And there was a point in my life where I didn't know the difference. I distinctly remember somebody saying one time, well, he's more of a manager than a leader. And I thought, what does that mean? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. It does now. It does now. You lead people. And so leadership, I think it's extremely important. A couple things I'll say. One is, if you want to be a good leader, there are great books out there that, like, I'm a huge fan of Jocko Willink's stuff. I love his stuff, man. It is very practical, down to earth. I mean, this guy's a Navy SEAL that led big missions. I mean, you want somebody that can lead a team of people, build and lead a team of people, that's your guy probably. And he does a great practical way of putting leadership principles out there. So reading books helps. You know, how we pass it on to the next generation, if you've got these leadership capabilities, whether they were kind of innate. Because there's always the conversation then, too, of, you know, are good leaders born or made? Well, I think it's a little of both, you know. Some people just have those natural, like, that's part of my job now, is I look for those people that have just those natural leadership abilities, and then I try to invest in them and coach them and mentor them and help them see their full potential as a leader. And that's something that we have to do as leaders, right? If we have those abilities, whether we have, you know, I would say, and at the risk of sounding arrogant, I don't mean it that way. I think I was born with some of it's just a nature of who I am to lead. But I also honed those skills through a lot of study and reading and of good leaders. You know, your John Maxwell's, you know, your folks like reading your Simon Sinek's. You know, I read these guys to try to learn from. Brené Brown, her book Dare to Lead, is a fantastic book. And one of her main things, and I guess this is what I would hone in on too, is my summary of like Brené Brown's work, because I'm a big fan of hers. I've read a lot of her books, is you know, there is no true human connection without vulnerability. That's my summation of her main point. So if you're going to be a leader, you're going to lead people and you want to really, you got to connect with them. And in order to connect with them, you got to risk a little bit of vulnerability, which means you got to be human. You know, you got to be human and just show up as a human and identify with people in their humanity. And you're going to get a mutual respect out of people at that point in time that goes far beyond any kind of title you may have, because the title doesn't make the leader either. I mean, how many times have any of us seen it? You know, myself in the construction industry, where you'll have a crew of guys and heck, the person that has the title isn't even the leader on that crew. There's just one person that seems to just be able to get everybody on the same page and motivate the team to do what needs to be done. And when the going gets tough, I'll throw this out of the 80s, right? I think this is an 80s song or something, you know, going gets tough, the tough get going. Is that Billy Ocean or something, man? I'm dating myself.
Dude. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. We're dating ourselves on that one. I don't really think anybody, yeah, I don't know.
Nobody's if we want to really
go too far with that one.
Nobody's going to get that reference, but there's no. Like, that's what leaders do, man. That's what leaders do. And then it's incumbent upon those of us who would call ourselves leader to then invest in, to look for and invest in the next generation of leaders.
It's one thing to learn how to be a leader. It's another to be able to pick out and pass that on. I can honestly say through everything I've been through in my career, now looking back at the people I've mentored or brought under me and worked with and then have then learned from, I think what's cool, and I think you get this too, is that like these new generations are coming up with a different experience, a different lived experience. And they've kind of looked at some of our old school ways and said, that's not how it's going to happen anymore. And like you said, it's not just, you know, in our construction world, but it's in a lot of places where it's like, nah, I'm going to pick up my bags and go, because I care more about me and more about my, I don't want to call it work-life balance, because there's no balance, right? It's just,
right.
But my happiness, my satisfaction, my purpose. And, you know, you named, I'm a huge Brené Brown fan. And I think understanding that vulnerability, it's so hard. You know, I'll tie her and Simon together. One of my favorite lines of Simon is nobody anoints you leader. You don't come up and take a knee and somebody puts the sword on both sides and you are now a leader. We will call you leader. That's not how it works, man. You earn it. Yeah. You earn it through servant leadership. You earn it. I mean, his whole pulling it from the Marines, leaders eat last. Like, it's such a powerful piece to understand that you can be a servant leader. You can look for those same qualities and put people ahead of you. It's very different than when we grew up. And it's very different than I think we portray, right? I think every movie, you know, even our political system, right? Like, they're these great, powerful leaders that speak on things and make no mistakes. That's not life, man.
Nah.
That ain't life. No. Life, we're full of mistakes. We're full of problems, right? And we're all absolutely beautifully flawed. I mean, if you can't get over yourself and realize that you are broken, you're just beautifully broken, then you're missing the point.
That's right? It, man.
And people aren't going to follow you. No. And that's what we need.
I mean, that's servant leadership. I mean, you say the term, and I think it gets used a fair amount anymore. The old top-down leadership style does not work. And people don't resonate with that, and they don't respond to it. You know, I'm a leader, do as I say. You know, the issuing edicts from whatever, you know, a position of title you have, and just expecting all the peons to, you know, do what you've told them to do. You know, I mean, that's kind of the leadership style I came up in. that I witnessed, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore. I'm one of those that is extremely thankful for the younger generation. And here's what I like your statement about work-life balance, because I struggle with that too. I'm like, how does that really, is that applicable? Like, what? But one of the statements that I like, and I don't know if it's completely accurate, but it does paint a good picture, is that I used to live to work. And this ties into the mental health stuff too. You know what I mean? Like, my life was defined by what I did for a living. That's how I defined my worth, you know? And here's where I am. I'm creeping into the mental health stuff, because my identity, who I thought I was this badass concrete man. You know, I've poured more concrete than you've walked on. I can do anything, you know, like that's how I defined who I was. And the younger generation, one of the things I believe they're teaching us, that I'm grateful to learn this lesson, is they work to live. They don't live to work. You know, they want a good job. They want something they feel valued at. They feel seen and heard, and they're contributing, and they feel like they're a part of a team, and they want to make a good paycheck so that they can live fairly well. But they have a life that is not their work. And so they're working to be able to sustain that life. And of course, I'm broad brushing here, but in general, this is the message I'm hearing from the younger generation, you know, and it was opposite with me. And with a lot of the people I knew coming up in the industry, like, all I cared about was work, like climbing the ladder, being the guy, you know, being the go-to guy that got stuff done, and, you know, getting all the accolades and the praise from your boss and your fellow coworkers, because you're an animal, man. I mean, I can't believe how much concrete you can pour in a day, you know, or whatever it might be, how much asphalt you lay down, how much mudding and taping you can do in a day, how much painting, you know, whatever it is, you know, framing houses, whatever. Like, the people I came up with, that's how most of us thought. We defined ourselves by that. And that doesn't end you up in a good place. Didn't end me up in a good place, no. Man. You know.
No, it didn't, man. No. It doesn't. I mean, I came up in the IT ranks, right? And same thing, man. I answered more calls than you. I was up later. I was working on things till 2 a.m. I'm always grinding. I'm billing more than you. And you realize in the end, like, why? What for?
Yeah.
I mean, first time, I mean, I've stood on stage many a time and said, you know, I don't live to work anymore. I work to live. And I learned, you know, my path to this, to serve. And we were talking about Jesse Hernandez earlier, and, you know, I sit with his quote right here, you know, find the people you want to serve, and how do you support yourself with it? Right. I believe that now, that it, to me, is more about, I want to bring this technology to people so that they can work to live, not live to work. Right. We can remove the friction of the job. Well, let's be honest, the part that sucks. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of this job that sucks, right? It's not the pouring of the concrete that sucks. It's the paperwork beforehand. It's the daily reports. It's the time cards. Like, that's the crap. Like,
yeah.
No, you don't go home and go, I've filled out more time cards than you ever have. Nah, I don't think I've ever heard.
No.
I don't think I've ever heard a superintendent say that.
No, absolutely not. No, you're right, man. You're right. I'm thankful for the changes. I think there are necessary changes taking place in this industry. And it's funny, because you get some of the old dogs, man, that they're bucking against it constantly. You know what I mean? They're like, these guys don't want to, you know, they don't want to work anymore. And, you know, all this, the crotchety old guys, which I love those guys, man. I love them. They're my people. They're my people too. But dude, it's not that people don't want to work anymore. It's that priorities are changing, I think, and I think for a good thing, people are more concerned with their life outside of work, and we got to find a way to. I think we, at the construction industry in general, has to find a way to be supportive of that and meet them where they're at. You know what I mean? And go, hey, we value your time outside of work too. Let's figure out how we can mutually benefit each other. And you can bring the value and do the hard work, and help us be a successful business, but also have that quality time away from work where your phone's not ringing and you're spending time with your loved ones, you know? And that's easier said than done. I can sit, right? I can sit here and pontificate and just go, oh, here's what we need to do. But
yeah, but you hit a number of good things there. Like I was covering an article recently that what's happened to the generations that are coming up is what's critical to understand their perspective, right? We came up through a world that was pretty much growing. We didn't see a big crash. I mean, the dot-com bubble was after we were, you know, grown up a bit. And so, you know, if you look at where we're at versus where they're at, they saw the dot-com bubble burst. They saw the 2008 crash. They saw COVID. Like, they realized that, you know, it doesn't just get better, right? That there has to be more. And we can lean into that because more and more of them are saying, hey, look, a lot of those people in 08, a lot of those dot-comers, a lot of what happened during COVID, they couldn't work. They lost jobs. They lost what they were doing. You know who didn't? The trades, construction, right. Essential within a month. We got 1 month of quiet. And then we went, everybody's going on job sites. We got to build again. This is essential. It's like doctors, nurses, paramedics, construction. Get out there and get after it. And they've realized that this is an alternative path to education, to learning what you want to do. You can learn a skilled trade and you can move around the country. You can move up the ladder. You can find what you want to do next. Yeah. And it's an amazing opportunity that's presented itself. So I want to dig in though, because like a couple of your posts, especially one that I'll be honest, like I can never get it out of my head. You talk about being a leader, and then you talk about that person who, you know, maybe you weren't as experienced, weren't as in their eyes as skilled, and then you get the position, and then they start subterfuging you, and they start, you know, with their own set of issues. And in the post, you talk about how you approach somebody like that, because I think that's critical. Because ego is not a bad thing. It's what gets you up in the morning, gets you out of bed and lets you face the world. But sometimes, you know, a little bit too much of anything's a bad thing. So talk to me a little bit about, like, that's what you write about, man. That's because you're living it and you're trying to pass it on. Talk to me about that particular post, if you remember it, what you had to do to go on there and how you can meet that person, because they deserve your empathy and respect. And you really approach that in such a different way.
Yeah, I do remember that post. And like a lot of my posts carry, you know, these are either things I've witnessed or maybe have happened in my own career. And I mean, they are stories. There's artistic license there. You know what I mean? There's fictional elements to it, but they've got a basis somewhere.
The guilty have been protected.
That's right. They've got a basis somewhere for something I've seen or witnessed or, you know, whatever else. One of my favorite lines, and this is a foreman of mine I had when I was working. He was a concrete foreman and I was a laborer with him. And he just said off the cuff one day, he goes, man, the work is easy, but the egos are hard. And that is one of my favorite lines. And it's so true in this industry that the work itself, once you learn, it's hard work. Depending, you know, whatever you're doing out there, it's hard work, but it's the egos. The egos are the hard part, man. They're the hard part. And that's what happens in a situation like that. So in that post, you know, I paint this picture of a guy that gets promoted amongst one of his peers to the foreman position when there's another guy on the crew that thinks he should have had it, you know? And now he starts, now he's chipping away at him. Now he's taking shots at him during the morning huddle. You know, now he's this because he's pissed, you know, he wanted the position. And he feels like he's better for it. That's where you've got to have some skill navigating a situation like that, because you can bring the hammer down. You can be the old school guy, the old top down guy, and be like, hey, bro, look, I got the role you didn't. You don't like it. You know, beat feet. You know, you can ride them up. You can send them down the road. You can do whatever that looks like in your industry. That's not the way to approach something like that, man. You know, this, what's this guy got going on? Why didn't he get the role? And I think in that story, and it's coming back to me as I talk about it, you know, in that story, man, he pulled the guy aside. You know, he said, let's have a conversation. And there's time for some radical candor there, right? There's time to just be straight up and honest with somebody and go, look, dude, this ain't happening. You know, this whole little fit you're throwing ain't happening, man. Like, this ain't going to work out here. So we got to squash this now. Let's have a conversation. And I think in that one, I think the way I portrayed the story in that one was, you know, the dude laid into him, right? Called him every name in the book, told him, you know, he was a brown noser, whatever else. That's why he got the position. And that's having some emotional intelligence if you're the leader in that role too, and being able to control your emotions and let somebody get that all out. Let them get it all out. And, you know, that's a big thing, man. That learning to control your own emotions in dealing in, you know, in an industry that, I mean, it's often hot or cold or windy or rainy, and the elements are whipping you, and the work you're doing is hard. And man, the tendency to just get frustrated and not be in control of your own emotions in a situation like that, it's difficult. And I'd say more often than not, you know, people don't get it. So once again, I'm going to go back to kind of just the being human and being vulnerable and having connection with this person and talking to them on their level and meeting them where they're at, you know, and being raw and real. Cause I think in that one, I think in that story, again, I think he kind of tells the guy, look, dude, you're the, you know, give them accolades where they deserve them. I mean, he said, dude, you're the best out here. There's no doubt about it. Everybody here would say you're the best out here. The problem is you can't lead people because you're an ass. You know, the way you talk to people, that's it. There's a difference between knowing the work, and we make that mistake a lot in construction, is we take somebody who is extremely skilled at their craft and assume that that makes them the next person to be in a leadership position. But that's a different skill set. You can know how to do your craft, whatever that is. But if you don't know how to navigate the different egos, different people, how to meet them where they're at, motivate them based on what motivates them. Like, if you don't know how to do that stuff, you shouldn't be in a leadership position, because it's going to go south. And it frequently does. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, frequently. Oh, dude, no, you nailed it. We frequently lose employees over that.
Yeah.
Right. We because eventually what happens is the crew, the trust breaks down. It breaks all the way down and they're gone, right? They leave. Yeah. And then eventually that person that's not been educated and taught how to be a leader then eventually breaks down themselves and probably leaves because it goes so poorly, right? So, and in that, I love how you say that radical candor. You take the story was, you know, the person comes aside and you let them have their emotion.
Yeah.
Right. Unload on you because you're empathetic and understanding that they're disappointed. They're a human. They wanted the job. There's reasons maybe you're like, yeah, these are all the reasons you didn't get it. That doesn't change the emotion that now this person is their boss and they're pissed.
Yeah.
Let them be pissed. You can let them unload and then say, okay, you feel better now?
Right.
Great. We got to work together.
Right.
Right. I think you are the best at your craft. You're the best one out here. The reason I'm doing this is because I learned these things. If you come alongside me, you'll be the next one. Right. Right. That's the difference of this new generation, of this new process, of this empathy and perspective, because probably somewhere in your life, you were passed up and you were pissed.
Yeah.
You probably have, you know, subterfuged a few bosses. I know I have, you know, in my younger days, I certainly did it. And I can remember the ones that took me aside, you know, by the scruff of the neck and said, hey man, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, okay, there's some things I can learn. There's some things I can do. And this, and by the way, this person values me.
Yes.
Right. Like you in that story, you're showing that if you value that person and their emotion, you can endear them and create trust. And I think this is also, I mean, one of the reasons that the top down and the crazy, you know, machismo world was created in construction is because hands down, lives are at risk.
Yeah.
Right. There's very few people that come to work day in and day out and somebody's lives are in their hands, literally.
Yes.
You know, and so we need trust. We need that environment so that, you know, people's lives don't, we want everybody to go home every day to their families, 10 fingers, 10 toes, at least if they've got those left. I know my concrete guys, you know, unfortunately, it's a lot of 9 fingers and, you know, 8.5. And so, yes, you know, I've been around them. But we want them going home, man.
Yeah.
And so there's a powerful need for that trust and that moment in which everybody's going to follow the direction because it's critical to our lives, you know, truthfully. And that's something we don't, in the tech world, we don't always grasp that, man. So like it's important for our folks to hear that.
Yeah, I think there's a balance here. And I think I just said this on a previous podcast I was on, because I don't want people to get the wrong message. Like I'm not trying to say that the construction industry needs to get like soft or meek or, you know, and I want to be correct here. Like I want to make sure I don't know if mamsie pamsie is a bad thing to say. I don't think so, but you know,
I think
we'll
be all right with mamsie pamsie.
Mamsie pamsie. You know, I mean, I'm not at all advocating. Look, it's a tough industry with tough people in it, risking their lives every day, and there's a place for raw, direct, real. Hey, what are you doing? Like, you know, that there's a place for all that, and that doesn't change. I'm not suggesting that needs to change at all. But there's a balance on the other side of that. When you talk about empathy, I mean, what is empathy? And it can be defined a lot of different ways. One of the best definitions I've heard is walking in somebody else's shoes is empathy. Trying to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. You know, in that story, the guy gets passed up for the promotion. Man, maybe he needs that promotion. He's in some financial difficulties, you know, maybe he's had another kid, you know, what is going on with him that he wants that promotion? Maybe he's got a low sense of self-worth. And I'm not saying you're going to figure this out on the job site, but he needs the title to feel good about himself. I mean, who knows what it is? Who knows what's going on with the guy that he wants that title so bad? But try to put yourself in his shoes. That's the empathy aspect of it, the facet of it that gets missed sometimes is try to be. I went on a podcast that was about empathetic leadership. It was one of the first podcasts I was on. I can't remember. Erin Thorpe is her name, and she's got something about empathetic leadership, or I don't know. I'm butchering this, but either way, like empathy. It's so important. It's so important, and it'll radically change the way you operate and the people around you relate to you and build that trust when you start trying to put yourself in their shoes in whatever the circumstance is, and then approach it from that perspective.
Yeah, I wanna pull at that thread a little bit, because it can go just beyond construction. Like construction, especially anything that difficult, anything that critical, exacerbates an issue, right? And so it brings it to the surface so it's right there for us to deal with. But consistently empathy, understanding that you have no idea what that person has experienced today and what they're going through and what you could say that could push them one way or the other. Yeah. And you don't know when you're that moment between a real bad day and a real good day. I mean, that line in some respects is super fine. And it's like that for all of us. I know. I mean, vulnerability. I've experienced that moment. I've gone through that life and put on, I call it putting on the mask. I've put on the mask a lot of times and I've bucked up, camper, and got it done. And I've sat across from the people. And, you know, I've screwed it up too. I've let that nerve expose and I've jumped on people or done things I'm not proud of. And it could have been just if somebody just saw you for you for that moment. And so that's the key. It's not just in what we do. It's see them for who they are. They're human. Yet not one of us is one thing or defined by one thing. We're defined by all of it.
Yeah.
And so it's such a powerful thing, but it's really cool in the fact that I believe that we are sitting at the precipice of the re-rising of blue collar, of real trades, of that work being seen for how critical it is to our future, but that we can do it different.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you.
Be different.
I 100% agree with you. I think it's of necessity, quite honestly. I don't think there's going to be, we don't have a choice. if the construction industry is to survive, and it has to survive if we want to continue living the lifestyles we live, right? If it is to survive, it is going to have to change in the way that it treats humans, in the way that it interacts with humans. And, you know, one of the things I was going to say real quick, talking about empathy and all, you know, it can be just as simple as asking somebody how they're doing. And man, I catch myself in this at times where I get on a job site, hey man, we, you know, just start barking off, not barking off orders, but going, hey, what are we doing about this? What are we doing? Man, learn to stop. And when you first have a phone conversation with somebody or show up, go, how you doing, man? And just leave it there. How are you doing? And then,
because I do this.
Right.
I do this all the time. And I ask that question, but I'm already assuming the answer and moving on.
Right.
And it is this learning process. It is the teachers that have taught me to pause and ask that question.
Yes.
Right. There is, you know, Brené Brown, mind the gap.
Yes.
Mind the gap between asking the question and assuming the answer, because it, like you said, it could be that moment. You know, how is it? It's rough, man. My daughter's sick and my son got himself in some trouble and I barely got the hell out the door this morning.
Yeah.
Oh man, that sucks. I've been there. I know.
Yeah.
You all right? You need something? You know, a quick conversation. Yeah. You know what I needed? I needed you to ask me that question and listen to my answer.
That's it.
And now I feel good. I've dumped something out of my bucket. I can listen. And we all got jobs to do. We all got lists. Yeah. I mean, every job site, every paving job you do, especially given you're doing it at night and they're saying, this is when we shut the road down. This is when we open it back up. This is what we got to get done.
Yeah.
So taking that pause, minding that gap, that's really tough, but it's important.
It's critical. I'd say it's critical, man. Really. That's the difference. That makes all the difference. I've said time and time again, and this is where I'm not a businessman. You know, I understand the basics of business. I'm not a businessman. I'll be upfront about that. But I tell people all the time, give me the ability to create a happy workforce, meaning a workforce that feels seen and heard and valued, and I'll blow your spreadsheets out of the water every time. Every time. Sit down with a guy when you start your night. How are you doing? Man, this just, and I'll be cautious, but just recently happened. Went out on a job site, said, and I knew a guy was dealing with some stuff, man. He'd confided in me some stuff he had going on personally. And he's not in any kind of leadership or management role. He's a crew member. And I just walked straight up to him when I got to the job and put my arm around him. I said, how are you doing, bud? And he goes, man. And he shared some stuff going on and he goes, thanks for asking, man. I appreciate that. Dude, those things make all the difference. And I think we have a difficult time a lot of times seeing that because they can't be quantified, right? We're in business. We're all in business to make money. And you can't quantify those things on a spreadsheet, but they will show up in the numbers, guaranteed, if your people feel like they are genuinely valued and seen and heard.
I want to leave it there. I'm going to say that you're right. We're always late on projects. We're always having problems. And I think it's because we're focused on the wrong thing, right? It's people, it's process, and then it's everything else. But if you see them, if you hear them, they're truly the highest performing teams. Teams that trust one another and have trust will always outperform the others. Yeah. And you're right. You can have your spreadsheets. You can have your Gantt charts. You can have your daily logs. You can have all of that. But if at your core, you don't have trust and you don't have vulnerability, and then you're not going to get performance. So right. Your spreadsheet's always going to be wrong. But just which way do you want it to be wrong? Because I want it to be wrong that we're underestimating them, because true leadership can take them beyond. And I just, Matt, I want to thank you for taking the time to sit down with me, for letting me pester you. And I want to tell you, from all the people I talk to about your posts, that we're grateful you're doing it, that we want you to keep doing it, that it makes a difference even to those of us who aren't in the field with you. It makes a huge difference to us, man. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate the opportunity, man, and the great conversation, truly. I appreciate it.
It is, man. It's been a blast. I couldn't have thought of a better way for this one to go. And hey, I want to thank you for tuning in for our Pause for the Cause interview with Matt Ole. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit The Contact Crew. This is The Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.